Hello, and welcome to Bat Flips and Nerds, the podcast that usually gives you a British take on baseball, but this week, for 1 week only, gives you a British take on Australian baseball, which I guess is a variation on a theme. Yes, it's the inaugural week of the Australian Baseball League, our second favourite professional baseball league in the world, and we're marking it with two very special preview episodes, the first of which is this one. So this evening's conversation is with Tony Harris. So Tony is the new manager of the Sydney Blue Sox. He's had a long and storied career in baseball, which has included a very long stint in the Dodgers organization as both a minor league coach and manager. He's currently the Pirates organization's international scouting coordinator for the Pacific Rim. And he is, of course, the Blue Sox new manager, having spent a lot of time in the Aussie senior baseball setup, including being part of the 2004 silver medal Olympic winning squad and spending the last World Baseball Classic as the third base coach. It's a really, really interesting conversation that goes across all of those different topics, so not just for those of you who are interested in the Blue Sox. So tune in and stick around. I must say a quick shout out to our friend Cam McHarg for helping us set up both this and the podcast that you'll hear on Saturday. Cam, for those of you who don't know, is the assistant baseball coach for GB Baseball. He is himself an Australian, but we'll let him off because he's been really helpful and he's a really terrific guy. I mentioned there's another podcast coming later in the week. That one is with Travis Blackley, the Brisbane Bandits ace pitcher, who, for those of you who don't know Travis, has spent some time with the Oakland Athletics, the San Francisco Giants, the Texas Rangers, the Houston Astros, and the Seattle Mariners, as well as time in both Korea and Japan. That's another fascinating chat, but before we get to Travis this Saturday, we'll leave you with Tony. Roll tape. I'm delighted to be joined by the new manager of the Sydney Blue Sox, a man who has served as the Aussie third base coach in this year's World Baseball Classic, and who is a veteran of both incarnations of the ABL as both a player and a coach. Good morning, Tony Harris. How are you?
Morning, John. How are you?
I'm not too bad, although it's not the morning here. I'm a little bit more sleepy than you are, I hope. But yeah, you know, I thought I'd greet you as you should wish to be greeted at 9 a.m. Sydney time.
Good on you, mate. Good on you. You'll get to bed soon. No, I won't hold you up too long, matey.
Oh yeah, it's been a long weekend for me. I've been partying in Paris. But yeah, I'm sure I'll just about manage to get through a baseball conversation. I've usually got energy for that.
Good on you. Partying Paris. It sounds like a tough life, eh?
Yeah, it's not been the worst weekend of my life, I have to say.
we go down the road to party, go to a French place, you go to Paris, so yeah, it must be a tough life, mate.
Yeah, it's not too bad. So, Tony, as I said there, you are the coach of the Sydney Blue Sox, or the manager of the Sydney Blue Sox for the up-and-coming ABL. But before we get into that, I just wanted to talk a little bit about the game of baseball in Australia. So I mentioned at the top there that you were a player in the previous incarnation of the Australian Baseball League. So I wanted to ask a little bit about how you personally got started in baseball over in Oz.
Mate, I'm 55 years old. Actually, I turned 56 2 days ago. So I'm used to saying I'm 55, but I'm actually 56 now. So there you go. I've been at it a long time. Kicked off for me as an eight-year-old, actually. The local club came around and did a clinic at our school and handed out some gloves, and I thought that was pretty cool, and sort of jumped on board. And as an eight-year-old, I reported the following Sunday to the local club and around the corner of the school, and there was, at that stage, and this is back in the 70s, there was no infrastructure for younger players, even though they were doing sort of school clinics and what have you. They were more flag flying, and I just caught onto it, I think. Anyway, the first couple of years I was playing under 15, so completely out of my depth. But I hung in there, and eventually the club and the league start up a 13 and under, of which I played, and then sort of went through the ranks that way. So started as a real young fella, never really had an interest in cricket or football, Aussie rules that is, or rugby or anything like that. I just sort of stuck with the baseball. And I guess you know, was reasonable at it. Represented the state a few times through the 13s and 15s and 18 ranks, and ended up in Georgia Southern College in an exchange program we had with Aussie Baseball for a month for a couple of years, and a couple of tours, and yeah, was able to play nationally and internationally, and did all the ranks, and enjoyed it. Was very, very lucky and blessed. We had a couple of players, or one in particular, Craig Shipley, who was on that same trip to Georgia Southern back in 79, who had actually just started a job in banking when we went there. So that's sort of, no one was thinking about college or staying on or, you know, being scouted or whatever. So we all go there as young students, or in his case, he just started a job as a bank teller. Sydney boy, as Craig and the Shipley family are. He gets tapped on the shoulder through our tour in Georgia Southern and playing games every day and being involved in the college system there. He got tapped on the shoulder to stay, but he hadn't finished his HSC, so because he was you know, going to start his career as a banker. So funnily enough, so he went back, finished his HSC, and got his certificate, and then went back and attended college. And he was one of our first guys that obviously was a pioneer in the minor league system, after going through college at Georgia Southern and then Alabama, and then being drafted, and then going through the minor league system with the Dodgers, and then playing in the major leagues was our pioneer. So it's a bit of a funny story, I guess, but that's how long we go back. There are other players, Phil Dahl, who I coach with now on the national team. He stayed at Georgia Southern also, the Reds, and there was some success at that time, early success, but we were not scouted like we are now. I mean, like I said, Craig was the first and the first to really make it, you know, in this century, as far as at a high elite level with the major leagues. But and since then, you know, the game has flourished. I played Claxton Shield, which was like state-based, playing each other. We'd play a tournament, sort of two-week tournament around Christmas time. And then I think it was about 89 is when the ABL started up. 1.0, we'll call that. That was our first sport version in 89. And that ran for about 10 years. Each city was affiliated with a major league city. So I was in Adelaide as a player, and we were affiliated with the Los Angeles Dodgers. So that was pretty cool. And that just sort of come about through administrative moves. So we were lucky there. Perth were with the Orioles. Sydney here were with the Blue Jays, and so on and so on. So connections, and then we would get our imports. We were allowed 4 imports back in that version, and we would get our imports directly from the minor leagues. In our case, with Adelaide, with the Dodger system. So we continued to play there, and then after about 3 or 4 years of that, for me, my knees were done as a catcher, and I wasn't playing very well. So I was more injured than playing. So I decided to cross the line and go into the coaching side of things pretty early in I think it was about 30, 31. Mm-hmm. And the Dodger people at the time, we had a coach down for a month by the name of Guy Conti, and he said, "You seem like a reasonable bloke. You're a catcher. You're a bit of a leader, and you seem like a knowledgeable sort of chap. Why don't you come back with me and spend a year. I'm going to recommend to Mr. O'Malley that you come back with me and spend a year and have a bit of a coaching apprenticeship, if you like." So I started that with one other chap, and the plan was one of us would eventually become a full-time coach, I guess, or go back and coach the then Giants. So my 1 year started then, and I think that was 92, and 15 years later, I was still in the minor leagues as a minor league manager and a minor league coach. So got a foot in the door and, yeah, didn't let go. So I paid a pretty price for it, though, at that time. But, so that's, I guess, a bit of an insight into me, and also the connection of, the old ABL and how that was structured.
Mm.
So where did your minor league coaching and managing career take you then?
I ended up in Double A as a hitting coach, Southern League. I was in Jacksonville. So I had my first 3 or 4 years in the minor league system. I got to be honest, I was just, you know, even though I had a lot of playing experience in Australia, I mean, it was just a different world. Mm. I mean, we couldn't, you know, Australia was at a certain level, and then, you know, this was professional baseball, and even though it was the minor leagues, it was just, you know, it was a head spin for me. Mm. So I just, my first couple of years, I can remember, I just wanted to outwork everybody. And that was my mentality. I wanted to be the first one there. And if I felt like I wasn't the first one in the clubhouse, with, you know, the coach's clubhouse or the player, coaches are always there before players, with respect to all the players out there. We have to be, because we, you know, that's our role. We be there first, we get there first, and then players arrive. That's just being professional. But I wasn't the first one there. I felt like I was late. So first one there, last one to leave, least knowledgeable, probably lucky to be there, you know, didn't take it for granted and just busted my butt. And then a couple of years in, and, you know, in game time, like that was spring training, which was, you know, very, very difficult, I guess, just sort of just feeling like you belong. Very intimidating, you know, dressing next to Mike Socha and, you know, having Tommy Lasorda in the, you know, in the clubhouse. And for you know, I remember walking in, Daryl Strawberry was like, you know, a mountain of a man, you know, his forearms were the size of my legs. And it was like, wow, this is just another world. I was very, very welcomed. My mentor there, Joe Barbara, who's been the bench coach for the Minnesota Twins for the last 10 or so years and has just moved to Detroit this year, for next season. He really, really looked after me, and he was just my mentor, I guess. And Joe Barbara had a group of and Guy Conti, who had recommended that I go, also mentored me. And we just had a really good group of 5, 6, 7 people that were all minor league lifers that respected, I guess, each other and respected, you know, what we're all there for, which was the cause and not, you know, not anything else. We'd check our egos at the door, and we would just get on with the day of trying to help the players and trying to be the best we could possibly be. And that's and we all clicked very well. And now Dino Ebel is with Mike in Los Angeles, have been for probably 10 years. John Shoemaker is still in the Dodgers system, believe it or not, sitting next to John Deeble at the World Series. I got a photo sent on my phone the other day. So that's, haven't seen John for years. And, you know, this group of the Contis and the Barbaras, you know, we just stuck together, and now we're all in different places, you know. So and that's the baseball life. That's the baseball family. That's how it works. But we all reconnect now and then, and it's, you know, we've been very lucky. So.
So, and one of the things that you've gone on to do as part of that is you've been a coach for the Australia squad as well, and you were part of the World Baseball Classic squad, coaching squad this year. How would you say that went as an experience, and where would you say the team is and the game is in Australia at the moment? Would you say that the sport's in good health?
Yeah. Yes. Part one of your question, yes, I have been involved there for quite some time. I think late 96, 97, I think, it was our first bronze medal in Barcelona. I was still coaching, but the Dodgers would let us go away, for they were very good like that, 2 or 3 weeks. Oh, yes, they want you as a coach. Yes, off you go as a instructor or a third base coach or a, you know, hitting guy or whatever. So I was always involved in those programs. You know, come more on board when Mike Young was managing, and then John, Phil, Dale, John Deeble and myself came on board through the 2000 Olympics. So we had that experience. We didn't run very well there, I think 6th or 7th in our own Olympics here in Sydney. Then Mike was let go or decided to leave, and then John took over as the skipper, and then Phil as the pitching coach, and me as the field coordinator, coordinating all the on-field stuff, both in trainings and programs, and also our defensive plays, and also coach third base, and also do the catching. So we built that structure, that culture, and a bit of the structure from 2000, that disappointing performance, if you like, or result, and then worked towards 2004 as a group. And the playing personnel were exceptional in taking some changes on board. We had Sports Psych come on board really quite deeply. In Phil Jaunty did a fantastic job. We all worked together as a group, both players and coaches and staff, pulling on the rope in one direction and change our culture. And we ended up doing really well in 2004 in the Olympics in Athens with a silver medal, beating the Japanese team twice and then getting beat by Cuba in the gold medal game. So big change there in Australian baseball, little change in sort of team culture and stuff, and really focused. And you know, from that point on, I think we've done very, very well. And, you know, we've been lucky to be involved, that three group, plus other coaches coming in and out of it that are professional and or that have played them at the major league level, et cetera. Craig Shipley and Paul Elliott and the likes, and now we've got young Andy Graham and Mike Collins, who are young guys in the minor leagues that are managing, that are all being involved. Graham Lloyd, you know, having someone like Lloydy as our assistant pitching coach and bullpen guy is just exceptional. Craig Shipley comes on board for the WBCs. You know, it's a pretty good wealth of baseball knowledge. You know, over hundreds of years totaled of minor league, major league experience. So I think at that point, in answer, a long-winded answer, but I wanted to sort of put it in some sort of context. Yeah, I think at that point, the leadership is in really, really good hands. Some would say not. I mean, you always get your, you know, your people out there that think they can do it better or whatever, and respect for that. No problem. Everyone is entitled to their opinion. I have, you know, utmost respect. You know, look at the last WBC. You know, where those WBCs, you're up against big league teams. You're up against the best in the world. You know, and we, you know, we don't have a roster of big league players. So we're piecing that together with one or two guys that have had some big league experience, like a Saupold or a Liam Hendricks, who unfortunately couldn't post this year. That type of player, Peter Moyland, you know, on the mound, big restrictions on those sorts of guys, you know, 30 pitches here, one inning here, 2 days off, one inning there, that sort of stuff. Young prospects, Lachlan Wells, an inning here, 15 pitch max, 30 pitch max with 2 days off, da da da, that sort of thing. Now, piecing that together with our amateur guys, you know, from a pitching standpoint, it's really tough. And then you go into the position players. You know, we had some guys that have played, or Beresford had just come off of being up in the big leagues for a September call-up previously, the previous year. And that was our only current big leaguer, if you like. You know, the rest were guys that had played in the big leagues a little bit, a year or two, like a Luke Hughes and that, and then you're coupling it together with a lot of minor league guys and or guys that are carpet layers and truck drivers, you know, right now. So to be able to compete at that level the way we have, I honestly can sit here and say, hand on heart, that we punch above our weight. You know, we really, really, when those teams come together from an Australian national standpoint, we do very, very well and compete exceptionally well with what we're up against. And a lot of people just don't understand what we're up against, you know, when you look at the opposing rosters. And the baseball purist would, because then, you know, they'll go into the stats and whatever. And, you know, and one thing we believe as Aussies, and you guys are the same, I know you are, is that on any given day, we can beat anybody. You know, we've proven that. And, you know, in any sport, that can happen. So, you know, we have that mentality. We've got that blue collar, you know, we call it mangy dog. Dogs. We just go out, you know, and we love that term. It started with John years ago, and then I adopted it with our national junior teams. And
so we just lost connection there. When we did, so you were telling me a bit about the mangy dog that is Australian baseball, and I wanted to ask you a bit about that. Not to use a totally derogatory term, but watching that World Baseball Classic, and you alluded to it a bit in your answer to the previous question, it kind of feels like the team's at a bit of a crossroads. So you had all of these veterans in there, many of whom have you know, a fair decent amount of MLB experience. So people like Trent Alchin, Ryan Rowland-Smith, Peter Moylan, Travis Blackley, who I think would understand that you would maybe call them veterans and say that as a term of endearment. But I kind of wondered where the next generation is and who they are. Who should we be looking out for? Who are the next Moylans or Blackleys or your Craig Shipleys, for that matter, going to be?
Well, we have in the minor league system. I mean, the first when you look at the pitching, I guess. The thing is, Australians have always been very solid in our pitching professionally. Mm. So we've always managed to be able to produce pitchers. And the first two first two that come to mind for me are the two Wells brothers. You know, when you look at that 19, 18, 19, 20, 21 type age group. So, you know, the future for the next decade or so at the national level. Like I say, we've always seemed to manage to develop good pitching staff over the years and had success there. And most of our big leaguers have come from, you know, the pitching stock. So those two are the first two that come to mind. When we look at our position play, and not only those two, of course, there's other young arms that are in the minor league system that are continuing to develop. They've just got to stay healthy. One that comes to mind here again is Dean Aldridge. I mean, he's a young lad with Detroit that's, I think, 3 years in now. Unfortunately, he's had some issues with his arm, but he's up to 98 in instructional league just recently and pitching at sort of 94, 96. So, you know, big, strong right-hander. The two Wells brothers, you know, two lefties. One was a minor league pitcher of the year, and I think that was Alex, and Lachlan pitched in the WBC. Mm. So we've got, you know, we've certainly got some depth in pitching. Finding the position players, I guess, is always a bit of a concern for us. And, you know, it's so much harder, I guess, for a shortstop to make it through a system or a catcher. There's 2.5 of those per minor league club. Mm. But, say, you know, a shortstop or a middle infielder or a centre fielder, someone to replace like a Denning or a Alchin, these veteran-type players. It's going to be harder to find. It's, you know, to be honest, it's going to be harder to find. So, you know, we have got some young folk out there in the minor league system, but we don't have the numbers in the minor league system that we used to. You know, we've actually got a balance, I think, now more sort of players in college as well as players in the minor league system, where we used to have a lot in the minor league system and some in college. You know, at one stage, I think we had like over 100 kids in the minor league system. Well, we haven't got that now. We've got maybe 30 or 40 kids in the minor league system overall, pitchers and position players. Mm. But we do have, you know, a lot of players in college. Now, their availability is always a bit of an issue, you know, whether you get those guys or not out of there, depending on the times of their, of whatever tournament, if it's a WBC or if it's a, you know, 23U type thing, which is a different time, and you know how it affects their schooling and whether the school's amicable for you, you know, for us to take that player out of, you know, a schooling system for 2.5 weeks or whatever. So that's a little more difficult. Sometimes with a college system, you'll lose that player for maybe up to 4 years. So Glenn Williams, our high performance manager for Australian baseball, is doing an outstanding job in trying to link us with, you know, the likes of those colleges, trying to build relationships, and so that the colleges have trust that, you know, hey, the personnel your player is going away with, he's going to be looked after, he's going to be pitched accordingly, he's going to be adhered to any restrictions. You know, they're professional coaches, they've got professional backgrounds, they understand, you know, rest, pitchability, you know, bullpen management, et cetera. And that gives a college head coach, if you like, or a college system confidence, or a minor league, you know, system confidence that those players are going to be looked after. But again, a little bit of a long-winded answer, but we've got some youth there. As far as our senior team, there's probably one or two, you know, maybe three guys that are that won't be there whenever we post again. you know, I don't know if they've announced their retirements or whatever, but there'll probably be a few of those announcements down the track. And, you know, it's time to replenish stocks a little bit for sure.
And you talked a lot up there about making links with colleges, getting people into the minor league system. How important is having a decent ABL product on the field, like, you know, competitive games, good quality guys coming in from overseas, and a decent quality standard on the field to sort of maintaining that pipeline?
Yeah, it's imperative. It really is. You know, when we didn't have, after that first 1.0 version, there was a hiatus for maybe 10 years, and we didn't have it. You know, they just had the makeup Klaxon Shield back in the old version. Let's play together for 2 weeks or whatever. And you could see that, you know, then on the back end of that, there was no flag flying. You know, we've got to have flag flying for the youth so they can aspire to something. So, you know, to fill those stands up with young kids in T-ball uniforms or, you know, whatever, is super important. From the flag flying standpoint, something to aspire to is very important. From that player's, you know, standpoint, the 16, 18-year-old, that needs somewhere to develop and whatever, it's super important as well. Then we need somewhere for the older guys to stay sharp, and we also need an influx or an injection of higher talent being the imports, so that puts the pressure on our development players, but also our older players, so that they can continue to be challenged both, you know, offensively and defensively. So it's a whole mixture. You know, it's an interesting question, and there's a myriad of answers there, but it's a mixture. It's a melting pot of development with the youth, veterans staying sharp, you know, guys being challenged, bringing the import that throws 95 and he's going to start every, one game every week. And that's what our hitters have to hit, so that when we go to a national tournament, you know, and they're facing Yu Darvish, you know, or they're facing, you know, the likes of Otanis and these guys in Japan, they're used to, you know, sitting on 95. Well, it's hard. No one gets used to it, I don't think. No one gets comfortable with it. But, you know, hey, I've seen 95 before because I saw it, you know, whenever. Mm. So, it's so imperative for the continuation and development of our game. When the time that we didn't have it, there was a drop off at the entry level. You know, there was nowhere for these young kids to go on a Friday night or a Saturday night and go and watch their heroes play. You know, in their little uniform, you know, playing catch down in the parking lot or whatever, trying to chase a foul ball. You know, we all did it as kids. So, I think it's super important. I'm glad that we have the 2.0 version now. There probably, there's perhaps some tweaks that, you know, that could be done or couldn't be done. Understanding the commercial viability of the league, you know, so we need each city now doesn't have the affiliation like I explained before. Mm-hmm. Adelaide was with LA and whatever. Yep. Each city's pretty much can go and get their own imports. Mm-hmm. So they rely on, you know, past connections, or they rely on people within the organizations like myself with the Blue Sox, who'll bring on a couple of, you know, Pittsburgh, you know, imports and the relationships that is the Blue Sox or Perth or Adelaide have had in the past with other organizations that they've nurtured. So it's a bit of a free for all at the moment in trying to get our imports in. And we're allowed 8 per team now, mm-hmm. as opposed to 4 back in 1.0. So mm-hmm. there's a little bit more of a influx of imports. So that element of being challenged is there for the locals and also for the development players, which is good. And I think it's, they've just about got the balance right, I think. What I don't like seeing is running Australian players out of the game, or, you know, not getting them playing time for the likes of import players coming in. I disagree with that. And as an Australian person born and bred, that's a national coach, I think we've got to be very careful that we keep that balance right.
I'm going to ask about a particular minute, and I wonder if you might be alluding to that one. So that's a really interesting answer. The first question that sprung into my head as you were talking about that was just to sort of put you on the spot, particularly as a guy with such a strong minor league grounding as yourself. Sort of what is the standard if we're switching this on in 10 o'clock on a Saturday morning, which it would be in the UK when you play a lot of your games, what are we looking at? Are we looking at a sort of double A equivalent, a high A equivalent?
Yeah, look, Florida State League for me on a good day. Okay. So Cal League, Florida State League. If you know, our number one versus Perth's number one, probably our number two, because we're allowed two import starters and two Australian starters. So, you know, you'd like to think that the depth goes through to the four games. Probably a little stronger on those first two if you, you know, depending on what your quality of Australian starters are. You know, in our case, our Australian starters are probably going to be equal to and are pitched at the same levels that our, you know, at our import guys are. Not every team has that. Some team, you know, is balanced all the way through. But I'd say, I guess I was alluding to the fact that the level does fluctuate a little bit, maybe as you get deeper in the pens, you know, sometimes. So, on average, you know, I mean, I coached in the Florida State League 7 years and in Vero Beach, and I would say it would be comfortably an A ball standard on a good day. Yeah, on a good day.
Great. So you've obviously had a storied coaching career. You've been over in the States for quite a long time. How come you've come back to Sydney to fasten on with the Blue Sox? What? Why now?
I actually, my professional coaching career finished in the end of 04. So that was from 92 to 04 inclusive. And then I came back to, I had a son who I was missing greatly. And he was a young, you know, he wasn't even in his teens at the time. So I would go away 9-10 months a year. And, you know, that was quite difficult back certainly in the 90s where there was no internet and no Skype and none of those things. What we're on now, that so it was the old dial, you know, press 8+1+61 out of the hotel phone, and 10 minutes later you're up for an $80 bill. So it wasn't it was tough keeping, you know, contact back then. So so I came back for particularly for him, and just wanted to change direction a little bit and be home more. And I'd been thinking about scouting for a year or two whilst I was still finishing off my coaching career. And then there were some, you know, possibilities about. So first couple of years I was with the Mets as an international scout, working mostly the Pacific Rim area. And then the last 10 years I've been with Pittsburgh Pirates as their, as an international scout. And now they're international supervisor from this, this side of the world in the Pac Rim. So that covers Japan, Korea, Taiwan, obviously all of the Oceania and the Asias and Australia, and I help your man Tom Gillespie in Europe too. He's a wonderful man and heavily involved in your system there. So so we all work together, and you know, I've been lucky enough to be involved in that role, and it's a bit of a change, I guess, in terms of direction. You know, I'm still coaching. I get my coaching fix with the Aussie team and with the MLB academies. Actual fact, I was in Regensburg, not this year, last year, working as the catching coordinator and working with your Connor Brown. So who's a tremendous young man and a great potential ball player, so he'll feature nowhere down the track, you know, somewhere very, very high up. So, I get my coaching fix with those programs, the Aussie team, the 23U national team, senior team, and then my full-time role is a scout. So, I guess that was just a little bit of a change for personal reasons, and it worked out okay. And now, because it's sort of a bit of a downtime scouting-wise internationally, you know, it's a chance to be back involved in the ABL, which I haven't been for the last 3 years. I had in 2.0 version, I'd come back with Adelaide for the first four years of that, and then had a couple of years hiatus, and now Sydney knocked on the door, and I know Mark Marino, our general manager, very well, back from Georgia Southern Day, 79. There you go. That's how far we go back. And, he's the CEO here of Sydney Baseball, and talked to us during the Classic and said, look, you know, we're looking at making some personnel changes. Would you be interested? And, you know, it's an uproot for me. I come from Adelaide, born and bred. I would have scouted the league this year from Adelaide and stayed home. So my wife and I have moved over here in Sydney for, you know, basically 3.5 months, and I can still do the scouting side of it. But, you know, we're taking charge of the Blue Sox as their manager.
Great. So the question I should be posing then is how are you going to do? It's kind of the $64 million question. what are your chances? How do you fancy yourself?
I recommend all your listeners out there should be a Blue Sox fan. That's what I recommend, because we're gonna do okay, Johnny. We're gonna do okay. Look, they had some missing, you know, pieces of the puzzle, I guess, is how I described it to someone the other day. And you know, they've been around the mark the last few years. Brisbane have dominated the last couple of years. They've got a strong roster. They're going to be tough no matter what. But I think from that point on, it's pretty much, you know, an open field. Everyone's going to have their good, you know, their good imports and their pluses and minuses, their balance of running, you know, the youth out there, etc., and trying to get that balance right. You know, we've got some, I like to look at our imports. We've got two AA kids coming from Pittsburgh, in Jinder Jang, who is a Taiwanese kid that we signed 6 years ago. He's a catcher and has caught at the AA level the last couple of years and done very, very well. So he's going to run our catching. He's going to be our main guy and run our pitching staff and do an awesome job of that. Michael Succi is a right fielder who's in AA as well. So who's our two pirate imports? Two AA kids that are, you know, pretty, and he's a great defensive / offensive guy with some power and can do some things offensively. So that's, you know, not everyone's boasting a couple of AA imports. So I like to think that that's going to help us. We mix that together with a couple of guys from last year that are repeats in pitchers, Foss and Shula. Foss is an independent guy that's, you know, that's a very, very accomplished, will be one of our starters. Shula's a closer, and he's with the Dodgers minor league system. And then we're all over the place. After that, we've got a pitcher from Korea, last name of Ko, who was in the NPB. He was in the KBO. So that's just that's a guy with a different sort of look, if you like. Chap that pitched in Germany actually this year that won the league there, Clayton Framuth. He'll be one of our starters, a lefty. So there's some good imports there. There is some really, really good young kids coming through, particularly on our roster. Our development players are super exciting. Kids, Anderson Vine and Rickson Wingrove, have just come out of the 18U in Thunder Bay. Really exciting kids. We've got Jacob Eunice, our shortstop, who was at 23, should have been the MVP in 23's, our silver medal team in Mexico last year. He'll be our shortstop. We have a veteran at second base, and Gavin Finglison was an 04 Athens silver medalist. And some repeats from last year, Trent D'Antonio, who was on our WBC team, and some good outfielders that, you know, that can go get the ball and can hit for average. Michael Campbell, Alex Howe, these kids are, you know, it's a nice club. You know, it's a really nice balance. I like where our club's at. Our starting pitching is solid. Two starters and Craig Anderson, Josh Geyer, you know, been around a long time. Geyer's stuff's electric. Anderson's a crafty lefty, you know, super smart, and a great bullpen. So I think, you know, all in all, without on our roster, I think we're going to be very competitive, and the pieces that we were missing, we've seemed to fill, and we've been able to fill spots that we don't have. So we haven't run Aussie players out of our roster for the sake of an import. We've actually just enhanced our roster with some holes that we had, particularly with our position players. So I like that. I think that's a good way to, it's a good way to do it.
Great. You mentioned in your answer there that Brisbane and they've won the last 3 years. I wondered, you know, what you tell your players, how you go about sort of beating them, and what kind of way you can approach it. I mean, the other thing I was going to say, there are obviously different ways to do that. You know, there's being a really great club, and there's going out and getting the splashy imports in the way that maybe the Melbourne club has done this year.
Yeah, look, you mentioned Brisbane to me, and I want to sit up and I want to punch the screen right now. And it's not, it's any disrespect, it's total respect, because they are, you know, they're a good roster. It's not, you know, it's competitive. The competitive juice comes out in me, and it's like their roster is good, and it's your big names, you know, Aussie names and good import names. And on any given day, we will beat them. And that's, you know, that's how I feel. And that's just in me. That's the competitiveness in me. And it's not, it's, you know, I didn't, you know, you kind of have it as a player, but as a coach, you're a little handcuffed because you don't throw it anymore and you don't hit it anymore and you don't run and, you know, you're not catching it. So it's like, how do you instill what's in here right now, you know, these players? And it's a belief, you know, it's a belief. But Brisbane are, you know, they're the premium guy. They're the current championship, and as you say, have been for the last few years, and they're the team to beat. So they're the team that we want to beat, and they're the team that we're going to beat. And it's our young guys and our roster, our ball club just has to believe that. And it's, you know, it stems from me, and filters down through our coaching staff, and it's a belief. On any given day, as we've seen in the World Series, anybody can beat anybody. You know, a highly priced, you know, big salary team versus the mangy dogs, if you like, the gritty, grindy team or whatever, whoever that may be. And on any given day, anybody can beat anybody. And if you have that belief going into a game, you know, in a 7-game series, yeah, the depth is going to show, and, you know, the quality of the pen and the quality of the, you know, whatever the players, you know, over a 7-game series, yeah, that it'll eventually balance out. But what we tell our players at the national level is, if we're going to go and play Team Japan today, and we've got our group together who are the hardest workers, you know, and the mangy dog mentality, well, let's go, and we'll go and either beat them, or as we did in 2004, or we'll give them a very, very good run for their money, you know, a 4-1 or a 3-1. Cuba, you know, Despina hits the home run, and, you know, all of a sudden, you know, it's a 4-1 ball game, as opposed to, it could have been a, you know, 2-1 ball game our way or whatever. I mean, it's, you know, it's swings and roundabouts. It's one pitch here or one pitch there. So on any given day, anybody can beat anybody in a one game set. So when we go to Brisbane, or Brisbane comes to us, that's the mentality. And every day is a single day, and we break it down to a day by day thing. Like, today's that day. So, and then tomorrow will be that day again. Yeah. You know, win, lose, or yesterday, that's gone now. You know, we'll analyze it for 10 minutes after the game, and then we'll get on with it. And that's, so it's very much a mindset. Now, can you sit there and go, mindset, we're going to beat the Yankees? Well, no. I mean, you've got to actually do the work, and you've got to piece the whole thing together. But it's a continual mindset and belief that every workout we have, we believe we're going to be winners. Every workout, every early work session that we have, which we have prior to our trainings, you know, we're instilling mindset and winning and champions and quality, et cetera, et cetera. We're not just taking mindless ground balls or mindless flips in the cage. Every swing or every, you know, ground ball they take, or every fly ball that they take, or every pitch they make in the bullpen has got a purpose behind it. And it's a, you know, it's a championship purpose. So it's built, I guess it's, you know, I could go on about that for quite some time, but I won't bore your listeners. But it really is, you know, it's something that you've got to instill from day one, and then continue to build and build and build. Funny thing, I'll give you a funny story. I was coaching in 2000 with the Dodger system, as you know. We talked about that. And Tommy Lasorda was a good man. And back then he was very, very active in the minor leagues, and I was a minor league manager at the time, I think, somewhere. And he said, "Hey, Donnie," he said, you're going to coach the Australian team? I said, "Yeah, I'm involved. Yeah, we'll see you down in Sydney, Tommy." I said, he had the USA team. And he said, "I'll tell you one thing, son." I said, "What?" He said, "I ain't traveling." And he pulled a figure out of his out of his backside. It was like 15,000. I ain't traveling 15,000 miles on an aeroplane to lose. All right. And he, you know, when he's sort of pointing at me, I was like, and that's, you know, and he was dead set serious. He wasn't going to sit in a plane for 20 hours to go down and lose. He was going there for one thing, you know, to win that gold medal, which in turn he did. But that was his, and, you know, that whole team, you know, was about that. He just, it was all about winning. It was all about winning from day one. And I'm sure back in 88 when they won, you know, their World Series, that's, that, you know, that's, that was his mantra. It was like, you're going to be in it. You're going to win it. You, there's no second places. So anyway, that's, I think, yeah, I'd love you, I'd love your fans to follow the Blue Sox and support us and, you know, support the league. Of course, everyone's going to have their own choices, but the Blue Sox, we're going to be okay this year, mate. That's for sure.
Great. Well, I think you've done a pretty sterling job, a pretty good effort to try and get us to overlook the three-time champions and the guy signing former ALCS MVP. Yeah, so
good on you.
You know, you've represented the mangy dog very well this morning, Tony, I may say. I think that's kind of all my questions. So thank you very much, Tony, for your time. It's been awesome, and a really fantastic way to introduce more of our listeners, I hope, to the ABL than those who watched it last year, which included myself. It was a small, vociferous, but very well-attached minority by January last year. So we'll try and boost that a bit more. You'll see a spike in traffic from the UK, I hope.
Well, that's good. Hopefully we do. And I know you guys are really passionate there. Cam McCarg, who's our mutual friend, you know, has come from here and been involved in your programs, your junior programs. And I know Tom, you know, is involved in the European stuff very, very heavily. And you guys are very, very passionate. I understand that. And, you know, if anything, if we can provide that baseball fix for you over the next few months, hopefully we can do so. You know, it's great to have the support from the other side of the world. So we really, really appreciate it.
Okay, thanks, man. I won't mention the cricket if it all goes wrong, as I expect.
Is there cricket in this country? I'm not sure.
not in this period when the OBL's on, I don't think. I wouldn't know.
No. I don't know. My TV doesn't turn to cricket, nor does my computer, but I don't know. I heard there's a game here sometime through the summer, but that's okay.
Okay, thanks, Tony. good morning to you. Have a good rest of the day.